Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Jeff Marsh, and I am privileged to serve as the worship associate. I am joined today by Cal Fry, today's worship leader, Lily Rappaport, the Director of Religious Education, and the wonderful Evergreen Trio.
I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. This is why right temporarily defeated is stronger than evil triumphant. I believe that wounded justice, lying prostrate on the blood-flowing streets of our nations, can be lifted from this dust of shame to reign supreme among the children. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. We light our chalice this morning with the light of love.
This year, Martin Luther King Day marks the beginning of a special UU effort of the Standing on the Side of Love campaign, 30 Days of Love 2017, that ends on Valentine's Day. The Unitarian Universalist Association sponsors this campaign as the umbrella for many acts of social justice. Some of these may prove as inspirational as those of the civil rights movement. As Reverend Julianne Silverman Bunn, a former settled minister of this congregation, put it, "We are standing on the side of love when we seek to house the homeless. We are standing on the side of love when we seek to feed the hungry. We are standing on the side of love when we seek clean water for those who have none. We are standing on the side of love when we make health care available to those in need of preventative medicine and medicine to heal their bodies. We are standing on the side of love when we offer education to those who have gone without knowing the joys of learning. We are standing on the side of love when we reunite families separated by war and government policies. We are standing on the side of love when we offer all people the choices of marrying their partner. We are standing on the side of love when we recognize that love makes a family. We are standing on the side of love when we open our hearts to all people as they are accepting one another and encouraging each other's spiritual growth. In addition to this, I would add that we are standing on the side of love when we welcome the refugee. And we are standing on the side of love when we contact our representatives in Columbus and Washington, and when we stand up, sit down, or march. Come, let us worship together. As we enter into this period of shared silence, I offer you these words from U.S. Representative and civil rights icon, John Lewis. History tells us that we must never give up, that we must never, ever give in or give out, that we must not get lost in a sea of despair, that we must all keep the faith, that we must keep our eyes on the prize. And further, the means by which we struggle must be consistent with the ends we seek. Now, surrounded by the sounds of our community, let us hold a few minutes of silence. I ask you to join me in a spirit of prayer. After the political events of the past week, I offer a prayer for peace, community, and power. We are fortunate to live in a country that values the peaceful transition from one leader to the next. We celebrate the community that may gather to stand up for their common values. We recognize that in this democracy, our freedom of speech and association brings the power that leads to real change. We are faced with challenges as a nation divided by words, but also divided by a lack of mutual understanding. Let us start anew, praying that our leaders will find common ground to create solutions to our problems and lead us to a future with systemic respect and dignity. Let us find a way to understand the common challenges that are faced and the frustration when we feel left behind. Let us continue to feel the power of the millions that stand up and march for freedom and the common good. We are blessed to live in a country where each of us is granted the right to speak freely and bring truth to power. Let us not forget, this right was gained with the blood and the sweat of those that came before, and remember that only in its exercise is it able to grow and flourish. Amen, and let it be so. We have a task. Let us go out with a divine dissatisfaction. Let us be dissatisfied until America will no longer have a high blood pressure of creeds and an anemia of deeds. Let us be dissatisfied until those that live on the outskirts of hope are brought into the metropolis of daily security. Let us be dissatisfied until from every city hall justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Let this affirmation be our ringing cry. It will give us the courage to face the uncertainties of the future. When our days become dreary with clouds of despair, and when our nights become darker than 1,000 midnights, let us remember that there is a creative force in the universe, working to pull down the mountains of evil, a power that is able to make a way out of no way and transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows. Let us realize the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. I will ask the ushers to come forward to accept this morning's offering. The special offering this month will benefit the Southern Poverty Law Center, whose ongoing mission is to fight bigotry and hatred using litigation, education, and other forms of advocacy to advance toward a day when the ideals of equal justice and equal opportunity will be a reality. For those of you here for the first time, there is a bookmark in the basket that serves as a small token for you to remember us and to feel invited to return.
My, thank you. So the Reverend Martin Luther King has been lionized and demonized, analyzed, scrutinized. His words have been deconstructed and reconstructed, his speaking style and cadence dissected with a microscope, and his politics were questioned to the point of his having been subjected to FBI surveillance for years. And yet here we are, memorializing him annually. And this week, it's quite a task I have this morning. How can I attempt to sermonize on one whose entire body of work is one great sermon after another? I am not up to the task. I cannot. I would not put words in his mouth. But I admit I can't avoid the related sin of selective quotation. There's simply too much material from which to select that really I can only hope that my work today is a reasonably accurate representation of Martin Luther King and his words. Indeed, Dr. King quoted himself often, or at least he returned to several strong themes over and over in his speeches and sermons. Now, it's not that many won't try speaking on his behalf. For one whose words written and spoken are recorded in such volume, it boggles the mind that there are all kinds of people who would tell you what King really said or would have said on topics of today. Even his family does not agree on all the details. Yet his words changed a country. A couple of years ago, Phyllis and I traveled to Washington on what we call a sort of UU pilgrimage. We went mainly to see the exhibit of some of the original books that Jefferson used to assemble his version of the Bible. Two fat books of the Bible and a razor blade. But while we were there, another of our destinations was the then-new memorial to Dr. King, which I illustrate here. There are many quotes from his sayings around the site, but the central design motif of the sculpture is the phrase, "From a mountain of despair, a stone of hope." And it depicts King himself as hewn from that very stone. Interestingly, it also sets him face to face in dialogue across the tidal basin with Thomas Jefferson, who owned slaves he could not afford to set free. King's is the first monument to a single individual who was never president to grace our National Mall. Why this man? Because he was an American who loved his country even while knowing its deepest flaws, because he had faith it could be bettered, and because his words speak to us with such resonance, and I think they ring that small bell of hope within us and keep us going even past the mountains and obstacles. This year, of all in recent history, I think we'll need to keep listening for the ringing of that bell, won't we? What I find in this volume of words, in this too short a life in which a movement was raised, is really a powerful confidence. Through disappointment and despair over barriers, after beatings and bombings, Reverend King still hoped and still knew not only was his cause just, but that it would overcome. In one of his last messages, he discussed having gone to the mountaintop, and from there he assured us we would indeed make it to the promised land. What did he see from that mountaintop? Beyond lay the mountain of civil rights, and he could see the mountain of voting rights, and another of economic rights, and the mountain of health care just behind. On and on, all the way to the mountain of world peace. Just in the distance there, he could see that promised land beyond. But he didn't stop. He didn't sit down discouraged over the distance that was yet to be traveled. He didn't stop even when he thought that, like Moses, he might not make it there himself. Though he would not make it over that mountain, he could see that promised land in his mind's eye. He knew it in his heart. What's more, he told us to keep hoping, that with conviction and hope, no goal would be out of the reach of dedicated people working for peace. Of all the things you hear about Martin Luther King, I would have you remember hope. He had a powerful dream, this man, and we share this dream. We still dream of what this country and this world could be. We will build that land yet. Our guide stars on the journey include inspirational people, not just movement leaders like Martin Luther King, but those like Rosa Parks and others in the civil rights movement whose small acts of defiance formed the levers which eventually moved the world. Even when things look dark, those levers are still there for us, waiting to be used again. They are being taken up by Black Lives Matter leaders, by our friends in the Women's March on Washington, and they are there for all of us. Still we dream. And Martin Luther King reminds us to not stop dreaming, to not give up hope. I will give you one example from Reverend King's last address as president to the Southern Christian Leadership Committee at their convention in 1967. At this time, King's nonviolent movement was being challenged by those who would use stronger language and methods. But King had visited with Gandhi in India and had the example of Jesus always in front of him. Amidst the grumblings of even the SCLC, this is how he concluded his remarks. "I say to you today that I still stand by nonviolence, and I am still convinced that it is the most potent weapon available to the Negro in his struggle for justice in this country. And the other thing is that I am concerned about a better world. I'm concerned about justice. I'm concerned about brotherhood. I'm concerned about truth. And when one is concerned about these, he can never advocate violence. For through violence, you may murder a murderer, but you can't murder murder. Through violence, you may murder a liar, but you can't establish truth. Through violence, you may murder a hater, but you can't murder hate. Darkness cannot put out darkness. Only light can do that. And I say to you, I have also decided to stick to love. For I know that love is ultimately the only answer to mankind's problems. And I'm going to talk about it everywhere I go. I know it isn't popular to talk about it in some circles today. I'm talking about a strong, demanding love. And I've seen too much hate. I've seen too much hate on the faces of sheriffs in the South. I've seen hate on the faces of too many Klansmen and too many white citizens' counselors in the South to want to hate myself. Because every time I see it, I know that it does something to their faces and their personalities. And I say to myself that hate is too great a burden to bear. I have decided to love. If you are seeking the highest good, I think you can find it through love. And the beautiful thing is that we are moving against wrong when we do it. We must address ourselves to the question of restructuring the whole of American society. There are 40 million poor people here. And one day we must ask the question, why are there 40 million poor people in America? And when you begin to ask that question, you are raising questions about the economic system, about a broader distribution of wealth. When you ask that question, you begin to develop, or you begin to question the capitalistic economy. We are called upon to help the discouraged beggars in life's marketplace. But one day, we must come to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. It means that questions must be raised. You see, my friends, when you deal with this, you begin to ask the question, who owns the oil? You begin to ask the question, who owns the iron ore? Why is it that people have to pay water bills in a world that is two-thirds water? These are the questions that must be asked. Now, don't think you have me in a bind today. I'm not talking about communism. What I'm saying to you this morning is that communism forgets that life is individual. Capitalism forgets that life is social. And the kingdom of brotherhood is found neither in the thesis of communism nor the antithesis of capitalism, but in a higher synthesis. It is found in a higher synthesis that combines the truths of both. Now then, I say, question the whole society. It means ultimately coming to see that the problem of racism, the problem of economic exploitation, and the problem of war are all tied together. These are the triple evils that are interrelated. A nation that will keep people in slavery for 244 years will thingify them, make them things. Therefore, they will exploit them, and poor people generally, economically. And a nation that will exploit economically will have to have foreign investments and everything else, and will have to use its military might to protect them. All of these problems are tied together. What I am saying today is that we must go from this convention and say, America, you must be born again. Let us be dissatisfied. I must confess, my friends, the road ahead will not always be smooth. There will still be rocky places of frustration and meandering points of bewilderment. There will be inevitable setbacks here and there. There will be those moments when the buoyancy of hope will be transformed into the fatigue of despair. Our dreams will sometimes be shattered and our ethereal hopes blasted. We may again, with tear-drenched eyes, have to stand before the bier of some courageous civil rights worker whose life will be snuffed out by the dastardly acts of bloodthirsty mobs. Difficult and painful as it is, we must walk on in the days ahead with an audacious faith in the future. And as we continue our charted course, we may gain consolation in the words so nobly left by that great black bard who was also a great freedom fighter of yesterday, James Weldon Johnson. Stony the road retrod, bitter the chastening rod felt in the days when hope unborn had died. Yet, with a steady beat, have not our weary feet come to the place for which our fathers sighed? We have come over the way that with tears has been watered. We have come treading our paths through the blood of the slaughtered. Out from the gloomy past, till now we stand at last where the bright gleam of our bright star is cast. Let this affirmation be our ringing cry. It will give us the courage to face the uncertainties of the future. It will give our tired feet new strength as we continue our forward stride toward the city of freedom. When our days become dreary with low hovering clouds of despair, and when our nights become darker than a thousand midnights, let us remember that there is a creative force in this universe working to pull down the gigantic mountains of evil, a power that is able to make a way out of no way and transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows. Let us realize the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Let us realize that William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. Let us go out realizing that the Bible is right. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. This is hope for the future. And with this faith, we will be able to sing in some not too distant tomorrow with a cosmic past tense. We have overcome. We have overcome. Deep in my heart, I did believe we would overcome. At the ceremony that was dedicating the Washington Memorial to Martin Luther King that October, President Obama's keynote address included these following remarks. Our work is not done. And so on this day in which we celebrate a man and a movement that did so much for this country, let us draw strength from those earlier struggles. First and foremost, let us remember that change has never been quick. Change has never been simple or without controversy. Change depends on persistence. Change requires determination. It took a full decade before the moral guidance of Brown versus Board of Education was translated into the enforcement measures of the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act. But those 10 long years did not lead Dr. King to give up. He kept on pushing. He kept on speaking. He kept on marching until change finally came. And then, when even after the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act passed, African Americans still found themselves trapped in pockets of poverty across the country, Dr. King did not say those laws were a failure. He didn't say this is too hard. He didn't settle for what we got and go home. He said, let's take those victories and broaden our mission to achieve not just civil and political equality, but also economic justice. Let's fight for a living wage and better schools and jobs for all who are willing to work. In other words, when met with hardship, when confronting disappointment, Dr. King refused to accept what he called the isness of today. He kept pushing toward the oughtness of tomorrow. Let us not be trapped by what is. We can't be discouraged by what is. We've got to keep pushing for what ought to be, the America we ought to leave for our children, mindful that the hardships we face are nothing compared to those Dr. King and his fellow marchers faced over 50 years ago. And that if we maintain our faith in ourselves and in the possibilities of this nation, there is no challenge that we cannot surmount. There's no magic in bending the arc of history. It is through the action of many hands, our hands, that arc is bent toward justice. Children, don't get weary, but our work is not yet done. We need every hand we can get. All I'm saying is simply this, that all life is interrelated, that somehow we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. You can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. Let us be dissatisfied, but let us overcome.